With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hello and welcome to another episode of MetaSidekicks. My name is Liv, and this is the podcast where we talk about all things metaphysical, spiritual, paranormal, and in between. Today is going to be part two from last week's part one guest appearance of Mara Einstein. After more than a decade of working in corporate America as a marketing executive promoting big name brands, Dr. Einstein has chosen to use her powers for good. Known for her publications of Brands of Faith, Hoodwinked, Black Ops Advertising, Selling the Sacred, and more, she educates others on how to protect themselves from the rise of black hat consumerism. Now, last week we focused on her five what I believe statements. When it comes to educating others about marketing ecology or the world in which marketing takes place. Now, as your sidekick to all things metaphysical, I thought that there was a lot of interesting crossover in how Dr. Einstein approaches how she shares and teaches others about deceptive marketing tactics and how MetaPsychics aims to teach all of you lovely listeners how to learn and understand and laugh along the way about all things metaphysical, paranormal, spiritual, and in between. So when it comes to Dr. Einstein's methodology of teaching others, I thought that a collaboration with her was going to be fabulous. And it was. So if you would like to go listen to part one last week, where we talked about Dr. Mara Einstein's what I believe statements of empower others, doggedly pursue what you want, lead with compassion, and create with purpose, then please go back to last week's podcast and go listen in on that, because today in part two, we're going to be diving into a little bit more of the spiritual side of things, focusing on topics such as recognizing marketing that's for your highest good, the idea of syncretism, pain points versus power points, prosperity gospel and being enough, and cult marketing tactics in relation to spirituality. So if you enjoyed last week's part one podcast with Dr. Mara Einstein, then I'm sure you're going to be quite excited for this week's part two. Without further ado, let's get into part two with Dr. Einstein. All right, so moving on to our next point. So I did read that you wrote, religion and marketing have an intertwined history. The idea of church merch dates back to the Middle Ages. And as soon as I read this sentence, all I could think about was the witch hunts. Because I feel like that's a really big marketing scheme that you could even talk about as well. But you wrote, today the pinnacle of success for a marketer is to achieve, quote, brand cult status. And I looked up an example and a fun fact of how, you know, the idea of church merch has been around since the Middle Ages. The Sistine Chapel, Michelangelo's masterpiece, is an example of propaganda. And it was used by the church in order to tell people who were illiterate the story of the Bible, which I thought was very interesting. Because you never think about it like that. You think about like the backstory of Michelangelo and the history of it itself. But I do know that incidentally, Michelangelo wasn't really into what the Pope was selling him, and he put a lot of little jabs in there at him, which is more what I think is fun to talk about. But this quote that you wrote really had me thinking that it's, you know, it's recently been brought to my attention that there has been a quote-unquote proverbial witch hunt for paranormal investigators and self-proclaimed psychic mediums alike on the internet. Sometimes I go online to just upload videos. I've been uploading videos once a month now instead of weekly because I am trying to reclaim my sanity within being a content creator and balancing motherhood and mediumship. But it seems like every time I go online to upload a video, everything is just like, this person's fake, that person's done, this is debunked. And I'm like, there's an entire like subgenre of YouTube where I understand where like you yourself are a marketing critic. But I think there's a way to go about informing people of things instead of just being negative Nancy's about it and being mean. So there's entire channels dedicated to debunking and talking negatively about others. And I really like that in your fourth statement, you refer to the internet saying that these algorithms feed on our anxiety and anger. Don't buy into it. Instead, take a breath. Because as a content creator, jumping on rage bandwagons, even in the spiritual community, like selling crystals and incense and having an Etsy shop and all of these other things is really big. So I figure with this podcast and this video, instead of trying to create more negativity fueled by the algorithm and perpetuated by those wanting to join the Black Ops advertising ranks, which I think you should talk about just a little bit. As a content creator, I read that and I was like, oh my goodness, this is so true. TikTok shops and everything. But I think it could be more constructive for viewers and listeners to learn for themselves who may be practitioners of deceptive marketing in the spiritual world by learning what kinds of marketing strategies are ethical and which ones may not be for your highest good.
Okay. Well, so I'll try and do this in a short way, but you're asking me to to talk about two whole books. So Black Ops advertising is all the ways that we're marketed to that we don't know that we're being marketed to. Another key element of marketing is that the terms used in marketing are very militaristic, if you think about it. Subjectives. What is it you want the advertising or marketing to do? Strategy. How is it that you are going to implement that in tactics? What are the specific things? What are the particular ads? Are you going to use PR that are actually going to communicate that to people? And who are you communicating it to? A target, right? So we are all a target. We are all consumers. And therefore, all of this strategic work is being done to develop a key communication that will talk specifically to us. And research has been done so that it feels like someone is talking directly to us. So if you've ever, and I know people don't watch commercials anymore, but if you're ever in a room watching a commercial and somebody looks at it and says, what are they talking about? They're not the target audience. And you watch it and it makes all the sense in the world to you, right? So the next level of military is Black Ops, right? It's all of the kinds of military that is being done that nobody sees. All behind the scenes. So that's why I called the book Black Ops Advertising. It's all the ways that we're being marketed to that we don't know that we're being marketed to. And some of that has to do with, you know, in the most simplistic terms, is if you're online and you see an influencer and they haven't specifically said that their content is sponsored, that would be one form of Black Ops.
Ah, okay. So almost like black hat SEO on your website where people used to put keywords in the backgrounds of websites, and that's actually not really allowed.
Right. Okay. That kind of stuff. But it's also product placement. It's, you know, TV shows and film that are, you know, like the Lego movie. The Lego movie was an hour and a half commercial for Lego.
That's true.
I mean, or entertained, you know, but still.
Or what was it? I think it was Aquafina or the French Alps water bottle or something. I like to watch Will and Grace sometimes.
Right.
And you can tell when they got sponsorships because all the labels are out.
Totally. And there's so much of that. And there's so much of it in film. And, you know, people say now Netflix has some advertising. But when Netflix really didn't have advertising, They really did, because all their shows had a bucket ton of product placement. So particularly House of Cards was the first film that was created for Netflix. And it was created using all the data that they had about what shows people watched, who were the actors that they watched, who was the director that they watched, how much of the film did they watch, did they watch it all the way through, all of that kind of thing. And based on all of that was how they came up with the idea for House of Cards. But they also called House of Cards the House of Product Placement, because there was so much product placement in the film, in the show.
That's so funny. Yeah, I've noticed that sometimes when I watch movies, if there's like only Chevy's, you're like, okay, Chevy's sponsoring this entire movie.
Yeah,
Got it.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's so interesting. Cool. Yeah, when I read your little snippets on Black Ops advertising and I was reading a couple reviews on the books itself, it seemed more like it was how content creators are being used as advertisers for bigger companies. So it's like, yeah, watch this video, but also here they're going to talk about this. And it's like they're becoming the authors of the advertising for the marketers. And I feel like as a content creator, that was very interesting to see that as a perspective, because I've only ever done, two promotionals. And I don't know, I never thought about that before. So I thought it was interesting that you talked about that.
One of the things, and this I talk about more in Hoodwinked than in Black Ops, is persuasion knowledge theory. And the persuasion knowledge theory is that it works sort of like a three-legged stool. So you have the person who is selling the information. It's your knowledge of the product that's being sold. And then the third leg of the stool is whether or not you know that the particular piece of content you are engaging with is paid sponsorship. And so if you don't know one of the three of those things, you're going to put more weight on the things that you know. So if, for instance, you are engaging with an influencer, and it's an influencer that you trust, and they're selling something you know, like foundation or whatever, you're more likely to be persuaded whether or not there's something that tells you that it's sponsored content. But if there's somebody that you don't know, and you don't know whether or not it's being sponsored, then you're kind of on your own in terms of, do you know the product category, right? And so it's your level of understanding who and what it is you're engaging with that helps you to have more of an ability to be able to protect yourself in those kinds of spaces.
That's really cool. I appreciate it. It's so good. I'm learning a lot. I hope everyone that's listening is also learning a lot. So
I'm trying.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. So you have a hashtag of getting hoodwinked wise, specifically on your free download for religion and spirituality. I was reading some of the points and I thought it was, you know, interesting talking points. So for example, you say tapping into our need to believe in something bigger than ourselves or something that helps define us is equally used by faith by the market, which is so true. We just talked about that a little bit ago when we were talking about when you walked into the place where they were trying to like convert you, make sure you weren't going to hell.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Where they come in and they're like, well, here, this is what you need to know, because if you don't do this, then you know, that could happen to you. I've had people that want to actually enter into spirituality, and I've had a couple Muslim people and a couple Jewish people as well ask me about, is it okay for them to believe in spirituality and their religion? Because in some of their religions, like there was one woman who was Muslim and she was so kind and she was so scared. And she said, you know, in my religion, we're not allowed to have spirit guides. And I said, listen, the more I've been learning how to do this, the more people have been talking to me, because my perception of what a spirit guide is my own. But there's other ways that people have talked to me about it and how to understand it. So, you know, spirit guides in my opinion are spiritual beings, whether they be human souls or something that you may not necessarily be able to quantify, that your soul chooses to be like think of incarnating. If you believe in you know, just living a life, your soul chooses, people to work on the group project, if you will. And when you decide to live a physical life, you're presenting, but your spirit mm-hmm. guides are always there. They're always helping mm-hmm. you. And they're there in the back of the classroom, like holding up the boards. mm-hmm. They're like, you're doing a good job, sweetie.
Right.
That's what your spirit guides are. So they're always there and they're a part of you. But I've also had people tell me, I've had a lovely woman. She came from being Mormon. I don't know if she is anymore mm-hmm. or if she still is Mormon, but embraces spirituality. And she said, you know, your perception or your definition of spirit guides makes me think about the Holy Spirit. And I was like, listen, I'm not religious. You have to explain to me what the Holy Spirit is. And she did. And I was like, you know, that's actually a really good way to visualize it or conceptualize it. Because, you know, my idea of spirit guides is like breaking them down into individual people or entities or beings, if you will. But mm-hmm. your idea of understanding spirit guides is kind of like a rainbow. So even though I can see, or I like to pick out each color individually and say, this is mm-hmm. this is this one, this one's that one, you believe mm-hmm. it as just like a rainbow. It's just one big thing, which right. doesn't negate from the idea of spirit guides. It's just how you are able to conceptualize them.
Right.
So when people talk to me about spirituality, they ask me like, is it okay to still like Jesus or Allah, whatever, but still think about manifestation or still think about spirit guides or still believe that my ancestors are watching over me and that they're not just gone? And I was like, yes. Spirituality, yeah. in my yeah. opinion, is being able to embrace and embody whatever speaks to you. So if right. you still want to hold on to aspects of your religion that you were taught that you still love and that resonate with you, then do that. And then still yeah. walk down spirituality. Because for me, that's right. what it is. There aren't right. rules. It's just embracing compassion and love and being happy about it type right. of thing. So right. does that make sense?
I kept thinking scholars talk about this as a cafeteria religion or cafeteria spirituality, uh-huh. meaning that you take a little bit of this from there and a little bit of this from there and a little bit of this from there. Right. And you're going down a line in the cafeteria, but you know, syncretism has existed forever. Everybody, you know, religions borrow from each other all the time. And, you know, if believing one thing helps you be a better person in the world, why wouldn't you do it?
What was it? It's not a pastor. It's the Jewish version of it.
Rabbi?
Yes, you rabbi. Sorry. When you ask the rabbi, like, do you believe in God? And he goes, well, I don't know. But when I wake up in the morning, the idea of it makes me feel better.
Right.
So
right.
You can still be Muslim, but you can still embrace spiritual practices. Mm-hmm. It's up to you. It is your own thing, yeah. your own journey to go on, and anyone telling you differently is probably not right. cool, in my opinion.
Well, that's part of, you know, one of the things that you look for in a cult is
telling you this is how you have to do it.
Mm-hmm. This is how you have to do it. You can't question us. You know, any group, whether it's a religious cult or any other group, if they tell you that you can't question what is going on in the group, then you walk to the door as quickly as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Right.
Exactly. So you wrote as a bullet point for this question, be leery anytime a company wants to play on your emotions. Let's face mm-hmm. it, they all do. It can be Amazon right. asking you to thank your driver via Alexa, or an MLM claiming that they can help your family by joining their company. Marketers look to tap into your humanity, or they look for your pain points. So know that that is what they are doing.
Right.
This made me think about how I've had clients come to me, and before the end of a reading, people will say to me, and this was when I very first started meeting with people, they would say, can you tell my loved one that I love them? Can you tell them this? Can you tell them that? And it has become my biggest pet peeve. And I'm like, where did you learn? Like, and I would ask them, and they said, you know, someone else told me this, or it was my impression of so-and-so and that, but you know, I told you souls know, see, hear, and feel everything. So if you want to talk to a past loved one, it is of my belief, just based on how they communicate with me and they know everything. Mm-hmm. People will ask me like, how do you know this is going on in my life? How do you know that is going on in life? Like my Nana Jo passed before I graduated college. How does she know that I have a doctoral degree in marketing studies, for example?
Right, right, right.
It's because they're privy to that information. So if mm-hmm. you want to talk to a past loved one, it works just like prayer. There's mm-hmm. no special song and dance that you have to do. If your religion or your spirituality dictates that there is, or it helps you, then go for it. Mm-hmm. But if for me, you can just think about them and they know that. So never, I always tell people, never let anyone that says they're a psychic medium tell you that you need them in order to tell anything to your past loved ones. Because the only reason we're here is to have that conversation of like, if you say something to them, I'm here to tell you what they have to say back to the best of my abilities, but never the other way around. And that point right there just made me think about that. And I was like, we have to talk about it.
What makes me think of too, you know, marketers look for pain points. They look for, you know, ways to tap into your emotions. And, you know, some of the tactics that they use are things like forcing you to buy quickly. Right. And they're doing that because they don't want you to think about it. They want you to just buy into it. And recently I've been thinking about this in terms of AI. Why does AI have to be rolled out so quickly? And again, this goes back to what we were talking about before. Marketers show you this thing over here, so they don't show you this thing that's going on over here. Mm-hmm. The reason why they wanted to roll out so quickly is they want to be able to control the marketplace of AI. Mm-hmm. And they want to keep the world the way it is. And it's not good for everybody else, but they're forcing it into the system because they want to get buy-in. They want people not to think about it. When I was doing research for Black Ops, it was early on, it was 2016. It was the beginning of native advertising and branded content. And when I would ask people in the industry to explain it to me, these are people who were selling it. They couldn't explain it. Mm. And it's like, no, explain it to me like I'm five. And they still couldn't explain how the algorithms work. And they still don't know how the algorithms work. And the same thing is true with what's going on now in terms of AI. They're trying to make it seem like this technology is so complex and to scare you with it that you will just like let it float along and move in the direction that they want it to go. And, you know, there's a number of people talk about being compassionate and working towards good that are trying to say no. And the people that are Black women who work in technology, if you want to know what's really going on and how to protect yourself in that space, look at the Black women. Timnit Gebru is wonderful in that space. Sophia Noble, Joy Bullamwini, all of them. And there's others, but those three are the names that come to mind.
So I also wanted to touch on the bullet point that you had as a marketing tool used by churches is the prosperity gospel, which promises that if you follow a particular religious leader, adhere to their teachings and share your income, you will become rich as well. And, you know, for me, this goes back to manifesting. There's also people, like I told you at the very beginning before we started recording, where someone said, I had a woman try to sell me like this chandelier of crystals because it was going to quote unquote raise the vibrations of my house.
Yeah. And the people that are, you know, this goes back to the vulnerability part of it. The people oftentimes that are most taken in by this are people who are of lesser means. And I'm thinking about you, Lakewood Church. So Lakewood Church is the church where Joel Osteen is the pastor. And the church has 48,000 members. The last time I looked, it may have more at this point. Most of the people that go to that church are not really wealthy people, but they are expected to tithe, meaning that they are expected to give 10% of their income. And they are told that, you know, by doing this, they are going to manifest, you know, all of God's will and good grace and all of that, and they will end up like Joel Osteen. Well, that ain't going to happen. It didn't happen before, you know, and it hasn't happened for the last 50 years, and it isn't going to start happening now. People in the Mormon church were told the same thing. What we have since learned about the Mormon church is that money was being used to then buy other properties outside of having anything to do with faith and to make the church a whole lot more money. There's a great 60 Minutes piece about what really went on with the money in the Mormon church. You know, people are suffering. People are suffering. People are having a hard time. They want to believe that things are going to get better. And they want to believe that if they do this one thing, that things are going to get better. If they're doing it within the context of a church like that, more often than not, they are being bamboozled with use of the prosperity gospel. It's also called name it and claim it. There's other terms that people use to describe this. And it's been used for decades. Mm-hmm. It's used by MLMs, right? And what happens is you get into that, then gets combined with toxic positivity, which is that if you are doing this and it's not working for you, then it's your fault. Mm-hmm. And the way that you are going to be able to overcome this is to be positive all the time. Whether, you know, if you're positive, then you're going to be able to sell, then you're going to be able to make it work for you. And that's just psychologically not healthy for anybody.
Yeah, that's kind of like, what is it? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing repeatedly and accepting or thinking that you'll have a different result.
Right.
If you do something happy and it still doesn't work, it's not because you're happy. It's because whatever you're doing isn't working.
Right.
So
Exactly right.
Yeah, that part made me think about how, you know, many people come to me with the idea that as a psychic medium, I can tell them how to fix their problems, or that their past loved ones can tell them how to fix their problems. But that's not the case, because that when it gets into spirituality things, that goes against free will and your loved ones and me. No one, not even your spirit guides. People a lot of times think that the purpose of a spirit guide, the Holy Ghost, whatever you want to talk about it as, is to tell you what to do in order to become great, whatever your idea of great is. That's not their purpose. No one can tell you what to do except for you. That is it.
But it's also like, let's break that down and talk about what is the definition of great.
Exactly.
Right? And we have created this idea that, you know, everybody should be in front of a camera. This started way back when I was at VH1, Nickelodeon is part of MTV Networks. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in a meeting and they were talking about research that was done by the Kaiser Family Foundation about, you know, kids growing up at that time. And they all said that they expected to be on camera. They all expected to be on television. And that's why, if you remember iCarly had a section in it where there was a piece where a kid was put on into the show. That's why they did that. So that kids felt like there was a possibility for them to be on screen. People, you know, feel like they're not enough based on, you know, whatever's going on in their life. It's like, you know, what is great? What will be enough? Yeah. That's the scandal, is that you're enough is always going to be out there.
Yeah.
And you're constantly chasing after somebody else's idea of what is enough. You know, you're enough.
You are enough.
Just the way you are.
I think that's good to talk about in this space as well as a content creator, because that's something that I've run into. I've felt pressured to step out of the professional scope of, it's not necessarily stepping out of the professional scope, but that's what it feels like to me. Because for me, I feel like, you know, being a medium is a business, and having a YouTube channel is a business. It's how I make my money. But I think that it's been marketed to people, especially within my age group, that if you have a YouTube channel, if you are on TV, if you can become an actress or whatever it is behind the screen, then you're going to be famous, successful, seen. And it's just, that's not how it is.
Right.
It's not how it is at all. And it's almost like you're pressured to talk about your personal life and then become an influencer. I think there's a difference between a content creator and an influencer.
Yep.
And that's where those lines start to become blurred. And that's personally where I'm uncomfortable with it.
Right.
If that makes
sense. There's two things I would say to that. There's a great book called How Not to Get Paid for Doing the Work You Love. I forget exactly the title, but it's by Brooke Duffy.
Okay.
And basically she spent many years, and she still does it now, she's a researcher from Cornell, who spent time with influencers and seeing how much time and how much work they put into what they do. Mm-hmm. how little they get paid for it. A lot of them get paid in kind, meaning they're paid with product. They're not paid with dollars. Mm-mm. And it's a 24/7 thing. This is part of the reason why we're seeing a lot of influencers tapping out right now. They've been doing this for a decade. It's been a decade that social media has really been around. And a lot of them are finally saying, you know what, I can't do this 24/7. And the expectations are crazy. Mm-hmm. So they're saying enough. So part of this whole idea of the gig economy and content creation and all of that.
The hustle,
having a side hustle. We've valorized the side hustle. We should be able to have a job where we work 40 hours a week and we have enough money to pay for our house and our family. That's what we should be fighting for. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't be fighting to become content creators. We should be fighting to make sure that companies pay us a living wage. That's one part. The other thing that I would say is, and this was something somebody said to me before I went online, and that is, you need to do a real sit down with yourself if you are going to become a content creator, and talk about and draw the line in the sand about the things you will and will not do. Mm-hmm. You will never see me in a bikini. Social media. That was an easy one. I rarely talk about my daughter. Once in a while, I use her as an example, but I like nothing that she wouldn't talk about herself. Mm-hmm. Never talk about my husband. Mm-hmm. Like that story that I just talked about meeting him, that's it. But otherwise, I don't talk about him. It's not my place to do that. I only talk about things in my personal life if it becomes a good story to explain some marketing theory or tactic, yeah, and help to help people explain how it works. Otherwise, I don't talk about my personal life. Mm-hmm. It's really nobody's business.
Yeah. I admire that, because it's been really hard to try and find that balance personally.
Mm-hmm. Just make a list for yourself. Really say, you know what, I've done this too. It has to do like if I start writing a snarky remark, because that can be snarky. It's part of my personality. And I delete it. The same thing's true with videos I've created. I've created videos and went, you know what? That's taking me out of my lane.
Yeah.
And I won't talk about that. And I've deleted them.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Anyways, let's move on. We could literally talk for hours.
Yeah, we could. We could.
So I want to talk about your book, Hoodwinked, because it is about cult-inspired marketing. So First and foremost, I know that you have sources for what are the characteristics of a cult. If you could give those, and then we're going to talk about how that translates into marketing.
Okay. There's 9 steps in terms of recruitment and retention in marketing. And I got this from a book called Comprehending Cults by Lauren Dawson. And the first step in the process is to identify prospects. And marketers do this all the time. And we've been talking about this. What they look for is people who are vulnerable. And then the second step in the process is to lure through deception. You're not going to tell somebody that they're entering into a cult. You're going to invite them to have a free meditation center in a session or have a free dinner. Then the next step in the process is to upsell. And then this is something that we were talking about before we came on, or the person that was talking about the $3,000 crystal or whatever
it is. Chandelier,
the $3,000 chandelier, right? So, yes, bring them in with what you're selling. And then the next step is to get them to buy something more. Then love bombing. Once people have started to commit themselves to the group, surround them with love and attention and tell them how wonderful they are. Then you have tough love. Once they've really started to come on board, you know, that's when you say to them, oh, you need to commit more. So that's when you get things like, you know, people at the Kabbalah Center saying, oh, if you were really committed to this spiritual practice, you'd find the money to pay for this class. You'd put this class on your credit card, right? Mm-hmm. And so they make it really difficult and shame you, frankly, into, you know, buying more and more things from them. And remember, you've joined this group because you're vulnerable in the first place. And so when people start surrounding you with love, what feels like love and support, you want to keep feeling those good feelings.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want to walk away from that. Then they get to the point where they want you to renounce the people who don't believe in the system. So if your family tells you, you know, this is an MLM or a pyramid scheme or whatever, you'll be like, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. And so you separate yourself from those people. Mm-hmm. In a traditional cult, you had people that were physically moved to another space. So Jonestown was in Guyana, or you have Rajneesh, who was in Oregon. But in social media spaces, we don't need to separate people in that way. We are already separated by the algorithms to be interacting only with people who believe the things that we do.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't have to happen physically. That's what's really different in the digital space right now.
May I interject?
Mm-hmm.
Just because I want to talk about it in a spiritual sense too. It's one of the mm-hmm. reasons I wanted to bring you on the podcast was I've had people come to me as well and say that within them learning about their own spirituality, they've come across other practitioners, content creators, whoever, that have said, like, if your loved ones don't encourage you on your spiritual journey, or they don't mm-hmm. believe in spirituality, then mm-hmm. you need to make the right choice to stand up for yourself and do what's right for you. And that is something that has bothered me so much mm-hmm. about being a part of the spiritual community. And I had a husband email me one time and say, my wife is leaving me because she's been told by other people. And he noticed that she listened to the Metapsychics mm-hmm. podcast. And he goes, mm-hmm. why are you telling people like my wife that they need to leave me because I don't support their spiritual journey? And I was like, I had a very nice email conversation with him, but we were also talking about like not sharing our relationships on social media, right? Et cetera. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I usually talk about my husband in the sense of being relatable to others, because so many people think that just because I'm a professional psychic medium, this is all that I do. And it's not. It's not my all
life outside of what happens on the screen.
Yeah, exactly. And most things that I get like an idea of, wow, this is actually really spiritual and it brought me a lot of love and happiness and feeling connected and grounded to the world around mm-hmm. me is because mm-hmm. of things that happened in my family. But one of those things was my husband. When I first started doing mm-hmm. this, he thought that what I was doing was a complete joke. He's like, this is hokey. He's like, mm-hmm. you're selling things to people that aren't, it's not true. It's not real. Mm-hmm. It's not whatever. And mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I respect your opinion, but I still love you. But I honestly really had to think about, this is what I want my life to be. This is what I want my business to be. And mm-hmm. that's when I first started it. I went to school to be a veterinarian, and now this is what I do. It was not in the 4-year yeah. plan, but it really made me think critically about my relationship. And I was like, I can be a psychic medium, and I can have my husband not agree with what I do. But mm-hmm. he did tell me something that was very lovely, which was, he says, I may not understand what it is that you do, and I might have differing opinions about it, but he goes, I do respect how you're running a business on your own mm-hmm. and trying to cultivate a future for yourself and a career. And after right. after long enough, he would listen to me do readings and sit outside the room and eavesdrop. And he's like, listen, I've never heard you say something dumb to someone, and I've never okay. had someone say something mean to you because you said something that was outlandish or crazy. He mm-hmm. goes, so mm-hmm. I may not understand it, but now I respect that too.
Right.
And I think it's silly. And I've noticed it as a trend personally within the spiritual community that so many right. spiritualists, quote unquote, tout, well, you have to go on your spiritual journey and it's all about you. And if other people don't like it, you just need to move away from them and all this other yeah. stuff. And that That's falls so into deep. One yeah. of the culty things that I've been reading and that you're talking oh, about. Yeah. So that's, anyways.
That's, you know, that's no different than a church saying to you, you know, not a church not allowing you to question.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly the same thing. If you belong to a faith that doesn't allow you to question, or if somebody says that you being on your spiritual journey, you know, somebody shouldn't stop you on your spiritual journey, and you should walk away from them, that's very culty. That's incredibly culty. Now, you as somebody who is new on your spiritual path, and if somebody doesn't support you on it, you can say, look, you know, this is something new to me. This right now is working for me and I'm trying to understand it. And if you love me and care about me, you know, just let me go through this. You may not agree with me about it, and we don't have to agree about everything, but let me see what this is and whether or not it works for me. Now, if the people keep saying to you, you know, oh, get rid of the people in your life, that's a big fat red flag.
Or if the people really are just extremely unhappy with you doing that, and then they're being abusive, verbally, emotionally, whatever, then obviously that's not okay.
Right.
But it's just, I've seen that as a trend, and I just wanted to talk about it with you.
Yeah.
For someone that's more on the outside looking in, but also a part of it, because you've done your own research.
Well, the spiritual world, any kind of spiritual or religious product has, you know, has the sort of different situation of being something that people can't touch, right?
And people, they try to make it tangible,
and you can't. And you know, and every medium is different, and every religion is different, and so it's very difficult. I don't like to talk about people as consumers, because then that frames you in a certain way. I talk about people as people. So when people are going to look for a spiritual home, it becomes kind of important for them to shop around and to ask people and to get as much information as they possibly can in order to be able to make a smart decision for themselves. And some of that, frankly, this is the one place where a lot of that's going to have to come down to your intuition, is, you know, what is the place where this feels comfortable to me?
That's very true.
So we were talking about renouncing others who question the group, right? And so that always becomes a really big red flag, because it becomes the thing that isolates you. And you can think about it in terms of cults. You can think about it in terms of multi-level marketing. What they do is, one of the tactics that they have is to retire your husband. And what that means is you're making enough money so that your husband can retire. What that does is gets you so engaged with the group that it becomes harder for you to leave, because you don't have a second income. Mm-hmm. And the people that I talk to in relationship to the book who were part of an MLM, a lot of them did have their jobs. And so they weren't, and didn't end up going down the rabbit hole that a lot of people do when it comes to an MLM. The next part of this is, then they introduce the core beliefs, right? And so once you've been so sucked in, you've eliminated all the other people in your life, then you get told what the organization is really about. And then the last part of this is they make it hard for you to leave. So you can think in terms of Scientology and how Scientologists follow people around after they leave the organization. And just the fact that you've renounced everyone in your family makes it really hard for you to leave. But oftentimes they have consequences. Suing people is also another thing that cults do. So if you want to compare all this to marketing, is that we talk about the marketing funnel, and there can be ones that are more specific, but the short version of it is they have the top of the funnel, the wide part of the funnel is awareness. So you want to find as many people as possible who would want to buy your product or engage with you. The next part is to make it part of the person's consideration set. What can you do to get them to be more involved with you? The next step in the process, when they actually buy, is called conversion, which always cracks me up, is when somebody has converted to being a buyer of your product. And then the last step in the process is loyalty. And now when somebody is a loyal customer to a product, we call them marketing evangelists. Because what we want them to do, and what social media spaces allow to happen, is that it's not that you go home, you buy the product, you sit with it, and you don't ever talk about it. You buy the product, and then you're supposed to go online and tell everybody else how wonderful it is. And so it's almost, you know, there's some things like, you know, brand cults aren't ever going to tell you, well, they will, some will tell you what to eat, what to drink and all of that kind of stuff, unless it's something like CrossFit, which is obviously a consumer cult, a brand cult. Mm-hmm. But by and large, they don't deprive you of sleep and things like that. And you don't separate yourself from the rest of your family. But there are some of a lot of the same techniques that are used by cults that are used by marketers. And one of the things that I talk about in the book is this cult marketing continuum, which goes from brand cults to influencers who I call cult light, to influencers who become conspiracy theorists, which is where conspirituality comes in, and then finally to multi-level marketing. And as you go across this spectrum, you have increased anxiety and increased extremism. And one of the key points I'm making in the book is not that we live in an attention economy, but that we live in an anxiety economy. Mm-hmm. And what exists in the space right now, particularly if we're talking about social spaces, is both the content and the technology have been created to get us riled up in such a way that it needs to be released. And that release will either come by us continuing to engage with the technology or by us buying something. Mm-hmm. And that's how it's created.
Wow. That's a lot.
It's a lot.
I have one last question before we go. The last question is, for those that are looking to join the spiritual community to offer their own services or perspectives, what would you advise as a baseline, simple, for enacting healthy marketing practices?
So a lot of what we've already talked about, I think the first thing is to decide what you will and won't do. Know who you are and decide what you will and won't talk about in online spaces. The good thing about cult marketing, or how cult marketing could be used for good, is what cults do is create community. And that's something that people are sorely lacking, right? We are in the midst of a loneliness epidemic. And so if there's some way through the products and services that you're offering that you can create community for people, whether it's through what you do or through allowing them to find more community after having interacted with you, that's something that we can learn from what cults do. The other thing that cults do that I didn't talk about here, it's something for people to look for. Cults provide an overall worldview that's supposed to answer all of life's questions. Mm-hmm. If people are looking for that, that is also a red flag. Mm-hmm. And let them know that no one person is going to have all the answers to your problems. No one place or philosophy is going to have an answer to all of your problems. You're going to find it in a lot of different places in a lot of different spaces. And so opening people up to explore, to engage with different kinds of people and content, you know, books and lectures and things that will get them into open spaces. I think all of that is good stuff.
That's awesome. That's fabulous. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Mara Einstein, for your time today.
It was my pleasure.
Absolutely lovely having you. And before we leave, can you tell the sidekicks, that is the viewers, where they can find you if they're interested in learning more about deceptive marketing techniques?
Sure. My website is drmaraeinstein.com. It's drmaraeinstein.com. You can find all kinds of things on there. All my books are on there. Some of my academic writings are on there. My appearances on other podcasts are on there. I'm primarily on TikTok. All my socials are Dr. Mara Einstein. And if you're not on TikTok, most of that content, most of the political stuff doesn't get reposted onto YouTube and Instagram.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. It was absolutely lovely having you. And to everyone that's watching and listening, peace.